What the Tech is brought to you by Wink, the world's only personalized wine club. Right now, Wink is offering listeners $22 off your first order when you go to trywink.com/WTT. That's trywink.com/WTT. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. I'm very stressed. Leaving for Vegas in less than a day, and then I'm going to LA for a couple days, and then I'm coming back next week, and I go headfirst into insanity as soon as I get back. But that's gonna, you know, I feel like you doing these crazy trips.
Yeah.
You know, you go back and forth, but I mean, didn't you do San Francisco? You went to San Francisco, you came to New York, and then you went to Miami. Is that true? It was something crazy like that.
I'd have to look at my calendar. I mean, I had so much stuff back to back. I don't remember. Miami, Seattle, Vancouver, New York a couple times. I went to Pittsburgh for, you know, a school thing. We had to drive up to New York. Like, we just had all this stuff. It was Amsterdam.
Yeah.
In June. I'm missing stuff. I don't remember everything. I don't know. It was a lot of stuff.
Something in the studio just made a very strange noise, and it came from an electronic device, and I'm a little concerned now. No idea what it is, but it's okay. Maybe something's happening here. Guys, we do have a lot to talk about. I did have notes, and right before we went live on therot.com, Brad posted that the invites went out for the Microsoft Surface October event.
And just a save the date email.
Yeah, it's going to be October 2nd in New York City. So Paul will be here for this. It's a Wednesday. So you have to get your life in order on that day, Paul.
I know.
It's a very busy day. Wednesdays are not necessarily the best.
Wednesday is the worst possible day for this to happen. So obviously it's going to happen on a Wednesday.
So I kind of want to touch on this a little bit. We kind of brushed upon some of the Surface news, you know, possibly for new devices and updates and stuff like that last week. But this is a Surface hardware event more than anything else.
I wouldn't call it that. Microsoft hardware event.
A Microsoft hardware event. So other than Surface devices, what other hardware would they potentially?
HoloLens 2, Surface Hub 2X. Those are the two big ones.
You know, with the Surface devices, we touched on this, and I got a couple emails about it, and I wanted to bring this up to you. I got a lot of feedback over the aesthetics of the Surface devices, right? That they're very unique. A Surface device looks like a Surface device, whether it's the Surface laptop or the Surface Pro or things like that. But do you feel that they need to kind of change the design at all? I mean, it's primarily been the same designs for many years at this point.
You know, not really, honestly. I mean, I think the trick, with one exception, I think the trick for Microsoft is that if I understand the Surface business at all, I think what they pride themselves most for is jumpstarting new market verticals or whatever, new types of form factors or whatever. And obviously, you know, Surface Pro has, you know, kind of come, has formalized that form factor, right? You see lots of copies of it. It's iconic in some ways as like the MacBook Air form factor. And they just haven't had that success with anything else, you know? And so I think they would like to keep trying. But when I look at most of their major product lines, I don't see the need for any kind of radical change. The one exception being the Surface Book, right, which still has that ridiculous giant hole when it's closed. I know because they told me they never wanted that hole there. It was just a function of the type of hinge that they created, which they fell in love with, and that their intention over time has always been to eliminate that hole. You know, and so it wouldn't surprise me to see a Surface Book 3 that, you know, close flat like a laptop. But we'll see. I mean, and you know, of course, a lot of the speculation has to be around whether Microsoft will discuss or introduce a dual screen folding screen something. I think the chances of that are slim, but it's possible.
It's slim for a number of reasons. Number one, who are you? I think the concept is always cool. Whenever we see new innovation, we're always blown away by it. I mean, the foldable Huawei devices and the Samsung device. When you talk about who's the market for this device, a dual screen foldable Surface, I guess, tablet, who would need that in the day and age that we have? You know, we have 10,000 different devices that kind of meet all our needs.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone who has never understood the point of this device, other than making new devices, right? I mean, I've never quite understood the point of it. So it's cool. It's interesting, of course. The Microsoft problem has always been the app ecosystem. So what's the market for this device? I mean, people will tell you that students will be one of the markets, reporters, any productivity workers. It really is a formalization of something that some people already do, where you've got like an app over here and an app over here and they're tiled and now they'll be separate on different screens, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, conceptually, there's nothing different about this when compared to like a dual screen setup at home or at work you might have, but other than the fact that, of course, it's portable, right? And so depending on how the thing is designed, you could, you know, you might be able to use one side of it as a glass keyboard, I guess, you know, which has been shown to be pretty terrible, but you could do that if you wanted to. I don't personally see the need for this. And I really think that for like what I'll call tweener devices, these things that sit between other things, the goal always has to be to eliminate something. It was an argument that Apple did not do a good job of when they announced the original iPad back in 2010. You know, we asked ourselves, is there room in the market for a third device? You know, and like, well, yeah, there's room for it, but what's the point of it really? I mean, it's for Apple, it was to sell another device, right? Because that's how they make their money. They sell hardware at the time. I mean, they're switching that now. But I think of the things that I carry and the things that most people might carry who are productivity workers or whatever. And everyone has a phone and most of those people have a laptop. And so does this eliminate something? Not really. And I personally also carry a small tablet if I'm traveling. For, you know, just for media consumption purposes, for reading primarily, I just prefer the bigger screen. It's right now I use a full size iPad. I prefer an iPad mini, but whatever it is, that screen is bigger than a phone screen and smaller than a laptop screen. And it's more portable than a laptop and blah, 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 whatever. But that's my personal preference. And when I think about a device like this, like, could it eliminate something? Could it? Not really. Especially not if it runs Windows, right? I mean,
yeah.
Windows is great for productivity. It's not so great for entertainment and for certainly not for reading.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion to have because, like, I give an example, the Surface Go, right? I saw a thread about it that I was tagged in on Twitter, and the concept conceptually, I thought it was a great idea, but execution wise, it just very low powered. Yeah. Didn't have enough beef. Kind of fell flat.
I always hear from apologists of this system, you know, the people who do like it, and there's nothing wrong with liking it, but I most people are not particularly honest about it. You know, one guy was saying to me recently, he's like, you don't get it. You know, this thing's a great tablet. It's not supposed to be a full-size PC. And it's like, well... Actually, it's not a good tablet because good tablets have apps, you know, and the problem with the Surface Go. Well, the problems are many, really. But I mean, the problem is it's not great at anything. And I'm sorry. Like, I know that's a little too candid for some people, especially the people who bought it and like it. And I get it. But
it's a $400
broader world here.
It's $400, right?
It's more like $700.
Is it? No, starting is like $400 now.
Yes, starting. But if you want to get one that has even remotely acceptable performance, which is frankly impossible, you need to get the type cover. God help you if you want the pen. You know, the real world cost of one of these things.
Isn't it better off if you just get a used Surface 3?
Yeah. Or, well, not a Surface 3. A Surface Pro for sure.
Surface Pro, yeah.
But you know, if you want a tablet, if that's what you're really explaining to me, then you need an iPad. And there really is nothing, even a nothing else, even a really good Android tablet doesn't match up to an iPad.
Yeah, let me look at this. Surface Pro 3, $400 on Amazon.
Other Surface sites, Pro 3, yeah.
Yeah. But you could get it for like as low as like $180, you know, depending on where you look.
Yeah, that's a much better device.
Yeah. And it's, you know, 5 years old. It's a five-year-old sure. device. I'm going to tell you something. I have like four of these that I've inherited. I got it like off a liquidation. Pros. Yeah, Surface Pro 3s. Yeah. That I it was like a liquidation. Mm-hmm. Of a company that I knew, and I knew the guy, and he pretty much told me, give me like $200 and I'll give you all of them. So he handed me five of these, and I cannot tell you, they are phenomenal for exactly what you need them to do. And it's, you're not really doing any video editing on this thing, but as far as an everyday machine, I'm so impressed by a five-year-old computer.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, The problem for the Surface Pro even is because people are going to use it as a tablet, you have limitations on how big the screen can be. The problem with using it as a tablet is you have a very big limitation on what you can do with it because it's Windows. And so even that becomes kind of a tweener device. But like comparing it to you know, Surface Go is no comparison. I mean, of course, it's a much better device all around than Surface Go. I had hoped, you know, Surface Pro or Surface Go, I should say, I didn't think it would be that crappy. I'm surprised by how terrible it is. It's fine to look at. I mean, the build quality is good. Of course, it's just a miniature replica of the Surface Pro. It's the same thing. It's just, but it's just too small. And then, you know, if you buy, you know, an iPad Pro of any size and get the keyboard, whatever you think of the keyboard, it's still a full-size keyboard. You know, you don't even get that on a Surface Go. Yeah. It's just the whole experience is terrible. The battery life is terrible. Performance is terrible. The smallness of the keyboard, which is, you know, less than, I don't know, we need a term for this. It's not full sized.
The keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
I find it problems. Very interesting. Just the most fascinating part of technology to me now, because we're out of the megahertz and the gigahertz races and the discussion for all that.
Well, until you know, we talk about this stuff, until you introduce a Pentium processor into the conversation.
Yeah, introduce that, and then we kind of realize that the necessity.
4 gigabytes of RAM.
Overall, the discussion around technology is no longer, you know, the speed wars of the 90s and 2000s. It's now become how you use technology. And our show has kind of shifted in terms of, you know, what are you using for what now? And well, it's amazing to me how it's shifted to becoming more personalized rather than this is a general great device.
Yeah, it's funny. I never thought of it that way. But what you just said is interesting because the way the world has evolved, and this is just like a general fact. I mean, I don't mean this is true of every single human being, but many people have a phone, and that's their primary personal computing device, whether they think of it that way or not. It's the thing they're on most of the time. A great number of people, some huge percentage, whatever it is, will need a laptop or something like a laptop occasionally. And the reason there is you get a hardware keyboard, you get a bigger screen. And sometimes you just need to type a report or work on a big spreadsheet or whatever it might be. And that kind of explains the problem with the Surface Go. It's not good at that. That's what it's not good at. It's not a good tablet because there's no ecosystem there. And everyone has different needs, I guess. If all you want to do is watch movies occasionally, Surface Go is okay, unless you care about the battery life, you know. But if you need to get work done, you know, if you need to do like typical tablet stuff, or if you need to do typical laptop stuff, it's not a good solution. And, you know, that's the problem. That's one of the reasons why, you know, Chromebook is such a threat to Windows is because they can be full-sized devices. They often are. Yeah. They're getting better. I don't know if you've been paying attention. There's more announcements coming soon, by the way. New Chromebooks, you know, they're higher quality. They're moving up the price scale as well. And, you know, this conversation, it's a lot like the conversation around streaming services versus like cable TV. you hear this complaint all the time from people who say, well, yeah, but now all these streaming services, they cost just as much as cable. We might as well keep cable. It's like, no, you don't understand. That's not the point. If you can save money with those services, that's wonderful. But what it's really about is the choice. It's the ability to move around. When people talk about Chromebooks and they say, well, look, they cost just as much as a decent Windows laptop now. Now there's no reason for these things to exist. You're missing the point. For a lot of people, not for everybody. A lot of us are old school. We grew up on PCs. We're used to them. But you got to remember, these things are complex. They're insecure. They fall apart. And I mean this like reliability-wise, not physically. And Chromebooks are simple. They're simple to manage. They're simple to use. They're simple to update. And most, like I said, most people aren't you. They're not sitting there on the computer all day long. They just need it occasionally to bring up something and work on it with a full-size keyboard and screen. The Chromebook does that.
It does it. Yeah, and it does it very well.
Makes more sense than Surface Go. It fills that niche. If you're talking about the tablet niche, then the iPad is honestly the only viable solution right now for most people. It just is. It does. I don't like it. You know, I'm not pushing my little agenda. I mean, but that's the reality of it. That Samsung just announced yet another iPad Pro style tablet thing that no one's going to buy. It doesn't matter how nice it is. I'm sure it's fine.
So here's a question for you. Why? I mean, I have my ideas as to why it didn't pick up, but Android, you know, with all of Samsung's resources and Google working on, you know, the Nexus devices and all this stuff, why did they fail as far as gaining, you know, market share with one device, you know, Samsung's market share on their tablet line, a tab line or whatever, or Google with the Nexus. Why did that not become a successful entry for them?
I don't know. I have some ideas, right? So I just have theories. These are not facts. I mean, but looking at the market, looking at how it evolved, looking at what happened, I think a lot of people will remember one of the few truly great Android tablets was the Nexus 7. There were two versions of it, and both of them were great, you know, for the day. At that time, it seemed like mini tablets were going to be a big deal. You know, Apple jumped in there with the iPad mini at the time. Microsoft got on board. This was Windows 8 timeframe. Mini tablets running Windows 8.1 were going to be like this, you know, little or big submarket, you know, for Windows, whatever. My primary theory about why that success never continued for either of those platforms has to do with Apple and a topic I kind of raise a lot, which is engagement. And I feel like on the Apple side, you've got an engaged, affluent community that is looking at buying as much as they can of this stuff. And there was such a market for iPad out of the gate that their developers saw the opportunity for tailoring their apps to the iPad in ways that on Android, it just never made sense and no one ever bothered. Not no one, I mean, but not as many.
Yeah.
And it just, it is a fact that there are far more high quality in iOS apps, let's call them iOS apps, that run on a big screen, meaning an iPad, than there are big screen, high quality Android apps. Doesn't mean there aren't any. But I mean, if you've heard, like, for example, one thing I did recently was if you use Microsoft Word or any of the mobile apps from Office on iOS versus Android, they're actually functionally very similar on both platforms. They look very similar. You know, they have the same basic toolbars, ribbons, whatever. The iPad versions are better. And what does that mean? It means they feel and look more natural. They respond better. They're just better. And that's very consistent, you know, in the apps I've looked at. So I mean, there must be more to it. Certainly hardware makers have done a decent job of creating Android tablets and then eventually Chromebook tablets and Chromebook 2-in-1s that, you know, run all these things, run Android apps. And if you think about it, a Chromebook that can run Android apps solves a problem for Android because those things do have these full screen apps that are web apps. And in many cases, they look great and they work fine. And maybe some combination of Android apps and Chrome OS apps could help Google and its partners defeat iPad. But has this ever materialized in any meaningful way? I don't think so.
No. And still, you know,
if anything, it's another complexity. And that's what was, you know, if we're going to get rid of Windows, Like, if the goal is to remove complexity from our lives, right? You know, Windows is an obvious target because as powerful as it is, most people don't need most of that power, and they certainly don't want that complexity. But when you introduce, you know, Android apps on Chrome, obviously there's a huge benefit there to just the app market that you get instant access to. The problem is a lot of those apps don't run well full screen and don't look good or don't work right when used full screen, you know, full screen or a big window on a Chrome OS device, a Chromebook. And in many cases, you've got two versions of the same apps. If you go, like, you could search for Microsoft Word and you could come up with the version that's for Chrome OS. It's a web app that doesn't work offline, but is more functional in some ways than the mobile app otherwise. Or you could get the mobile app, which is an Android app, which has been tailored to work in a on a tablet. It's also been tailored to work on Samsung Dex. So the idea is, that, you know, again, same thing, full screen. But you still have two of them, you know, and that's just one example. How do you know which one to use? How do you know which one the icon represents? The icons are slightly different. Like this is the, you know, it's like, it's nice that it exists. We cannot deny the benefit of it, but we also can't deny the complexity of it to a normal human being. How would my wife or my mother or my father, you know, I don't mean to single out women. I mean, just normal people, human beings, just normal, non-technical people. How would they handle this complexity? You know, poorly. Probably.
Very.
Very. Frustrated. You know, listen, well, there's a reason people choose iPads.
One of my friends just got a Chromebook. They were looking for something a little inexpensive. They end up spending like $500 on it, but they got a Chromebook and they're using it for work stuff. And their entire work ecosystem is based around Google Docs. Yeah. So for her, absolutely perfect. It does everything it needs it to do, and she doesn't have to worry about anything else. It just, that's all she's doing is Excel.
This is a workflow issue, right? And so I think one of the problems, it's something I think about all the time, and I'm probably going to write something about this soon, but you know, I have a certain way of doing things. I'm a writer, and so I need a big screen. I need a real keyboard. You could make the argument that I could use a Mac or a Chromebook or whatever. It would be fine. I just putting words on a screen, basically. But I do things in a certain way. I don't have to use Microsoft Word, but I do use Microsoft OneDrive to store all my stuff. And what you just described, your friend here, who, you know, it's all Google Docs, meaning it's all Google Drive, meaning it's all Google ecosystem. Like, that's a switch I'd have to make. So if I was going to use a Chromebook, I mean, yeah, I could use the web version or the mobile version of Microsoft Word. But what I found, because we just talked about it, I've been playing with it, is you kind of have to contort yourself a little bit, because I get file system integration on Windows with OneDrive. It's very seamless. I can drag and drop between my desktop and OneDrive, and I can archive things. It's very easy. It's very familiar, and that's what makes it easy to me. And so one of the hurdles when you go to a different system is, well, what do I have to change? And is the cost of that change, the effort, is it worth it? You know, if I were to go to a Mac, obviously I'd pay a lot more for the hardware. I could still get file system integration with OneDrive, which is a huge benefit to me personally. And I would still be able to use the Microsoft Office applications, which is fine. You know, they're fine. But Chromebook, you know, you get into these two levels of like workflow change. Right? You get all that stuff is now not available. You can get kind of access to OneDrive through the file system, but it's not persistent, and you don't have sync. And there's no, you know, files on demand or anything like that. The Microsoft Office apps are only available on the web or mobile, I guess. So they're kind of inferior. I'd be better off going with the Google stuff, right? But then I have to change. But then what about the other stuff I do? You know, I use Photoshop Elements to manipulate graphics. I use it every single day. Or even something simple like Microsoft Paint, which is built into Windows. When I go to the Mac, not having something like Paint on the Mac, not having something like Paint on Chrome OS is a problem for me, because it's a familiar tool. It's something I use for very specific purposes. It does certain things very well, very quick. It's efficient for me because I use it, not because it's necessarily easy to use, whatever. These are barriers, you know. And so if I think this is part of the problem people have with Chromebook, you know, at least on my site, you know, the people who are Windows guys. It's you, when you run into too many of these roadblocks, you just kind of give up. And I think people and I think look that's at it what, and they say, yeah. It's not the same. It's not going to work. It doesn't work. It doesn't mean it doesn't work for other people, though.
Hey, so to kind of move on to this, I wanted to get your opinion of this. And there's a couple topics here. Well, first of all, you're back to the Nook.
Yeah.
I saw that and I literally yelled no out loud. Like Michael Scott in The Office. I went, God, no. My wife looked at me like I'm nuts, and I did not even attempt to explain.
Tobied you.
You Tobied me. Why you went to the Nook, because I know that you had a ton of problems with that HP all-in-one. You wrote about it on Therat.com, actually. And
I love that
a
computer. I wish it worked. HP or the Nook? Did everything I could. I even thought there might be a physical connection problem, because the display, you can actually open up the box and lift the display off. And I guess they have a stand you can put it in. I've never been able to find it, but then you can just use it like a monitor. And I always thought, like, when this computer dies, I'm going to use this screen like that, because I love this screen. And I thought maybe the cable inside was grounding on something, because clearly it's something to do with the display. There's something with sleep, its sleep problems and bringing the display back up. The machine's on, like it's on, but the display wouldn't come on in the morning. Yeah. It's just months and months of frustration. So, if I limit myself to what's available in my home, because I don't want to spend money necessarily, although I guess you could make the argument, like, this is my career, maybe I should have something that just works.
Yeah, Paul. maybe.
I know. I do have a lot of computers, I guess. So some of the things I could do, and by the way, I could still do, a lot of people have asked me, why don't you just use a laptop? You know, you have 30 of them or whatever. I mean, like, just pick the one you like the most and use it. And the problem with that for me goes back to that. Well, a couple of things. The big screen, big keyboard thing that I was talking about. Laptops have, you know, straight keyboards like this. I use an ergonomic keyboard.
So you brought that up to me a while ago on the fact that you need a big screen in front of you because you have so many things open. And I always felt that I'm able to manage everything on a 15-inch display. Since diving into this, doing more consulting stuff, and I need a display. I need a large display in front of me. It's impossible to do everything.
The display I'm temporarily using right now is a 23 or 24-inch HP business class display. It's probably several years old now. It has really thick. It's funny. The bezels are like an inch thick. It looks really old-fashioned sitting in front of it because the bezels are so big. But honestly, the display quality is pretty fantastic. I especially like the something about the quality of the text. It's got a nice, I don't know, it just looks good to me. But it's only 1080p, and that's part of the problem. So, I mean, honestly, at this resolution and this size, you kind of want to run the browser full screen. But that makes it difficult to do a lot of the draggy-droppy stuff that I do, which is just part of my daily workflow. And it's one of the same frustrations I have when I work on a laptop, no matter how big the screen is. You know, I spend stupid amounts of time positioning windows so I have a little sliver of space on the side where I can drag stuff to and whatever. But it's just, it's a little frustrating. Yeah. But as far as the computer itself, yeah. So I guess I could use a laptop. One of the reasons I don't use a laptop is I would have to use it with an external screen. And one of the things I just hate about Windows, I've always hated it. I go back again and again and again. I just hate it, is the interaction between an external display and the internal display on the laptop. And when you undock and dock,
it screws up. Yeah.
Application windows resize and move around, and they're never quite right. And it's like you'll have a window that's like, it's like it looks like it's full screen, but it's not actually maximized. It's just has resized just to the dimensions of the screen, so it's a little bit off. I can't. That makes me insane. Just maybe it's an OCD thing. I just hate it. There's no reason. Like there's no data on this computer or on any computer I've ever used that's only on that computer. That's important. Everything is synced to OneDrive, like I said. So moving from PC to PC is a fairly seamless process. It's just, you know, it has to work. So as far as like desktop computers go, honestly, I don't have very many of them. I have the NUC, which I've been using here. You can't see this, but I mean, off to this side, I've been using it over here, actually with this display, which has been great for that. So for the book, 1080p is where I want the screenshots. It's perfect for the book. And then I had an HP gaming PC, and I actually thought, because one of the things I'm going to get into more this year is PC based gaming, that this would be a great choice. And I figured when I'm finally done with this all in one, I'll move to this gaming PC. But then my son came home for the summer. And you may remember, I don't know if it was 2 years ago, probably 2 years ago. I guess it was 2 years, whatever it was, 3 years ago. My son and I built a gaming PC for him.
Yes.
And it was this gigantic.
Is that the one
thing.
That I helped with?
Yeah,
I screwed you on the video card. I told you to buy something that you shouldn't have.
Oh, no. That was the, that was the HP tower that we used in the, for the podcast before down in the cellar. And when we had the Al-Qaeda basement in the other house. So anyway, but he was home for the summer and he, you know, of course he lugs this gigantic computer back and he's upstairs in the back of the house in this room. No one ever uses his bedroom, but he never really lived there. And the summer was weird because he's been off to college for 3 years. Like he hasn't lived with us in 3 years. So he was actually home all summer. It was actually kind of unusual. And but he's back there. You can hear the thing. It's like really loud. He's deaf. It doesn't matter that much to him. But
to
when you go upstairs,
else.
Yeah, it, for me, it was terrible. But I'm really sensitive to sound. But, you know, go upstairs and it's like 20 degrees warmer upstairs. So I go back to the room and I'm like, what's going on? Why is it so hot up here? And he's cranking the AC. My wife's freezing her ass off in her office and he's in there and it's like 90 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's because of this computer.
Yeah. Welcome
and
to my world.
To do,
welcome to my world, Paul. This is what
Yeah. So this room that I'm in right now is maybe 10 by 10, right? It's a small, it used to be a dining room. It's a small room. The doors are closed. And just from this nook, this room is heating up right now. So my wife poked her head in earlier because I had it closed from earlier for whatever reason. And she said, geez, it's really hot in here. And I'm like, yeah, this is the little hockey puck thing is the computer. This is the only thing running in here right now. And it will still be 10 degrees or more warmer than the rest of the house.
I'll show you this.
So
I play this game all the time. And I know sometimes people get annoyed by it, but look at this room was 71 degrees when I turned the air conditioner off. I had the door open and the AC was pumping and it was fine. We've been doing a show for 36 minutes, right?
Let's see.
32 minutes, 87 degrees.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
No, it's
there's nothing.
And you have a lot of equipment in there.
I brought it down since the last time you saw it, Paul. I have one computer, and I got the audio rack. It's putting out heat, but it's not like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my mind. It's this PC over here. That's what it is mostly.
Well,
it's wild.
In my son's case, I finally said, look, we got to fix this problem. And I said, if you want, I have this gaming PC. It's probably not as powerful as your computer, but it's got we could look it up, but it's got whatever graphics card. I don't really use it, you know, and if you're just going to use it for the summer, it's fine. So he switched to that. He put all his games on it. He put his work stuff on it. And the thing's really quiet, and it lowered the temperature upstairs dramatically. And he was like, actually, the graphics card that's in this thing is better than mine because we built this 3 years ago, whatever time frame it was. And then when he left at the end of the summer, he was like, if it's all right with you, I was going to take this thing home with me. And I was like, yeah, all right, go ahead.
So, how's it going for him?
What do you mean?
How did college go? I mean, he's 2 years in now, but...
He's three years in.
Jeez, he's almost done.
Yeah, well, no, he isn't because he switched majors, so... He's going to be at least 4.5, if not 5 years by the time it's all said and done. But he got his associate's degree and then.
And your daughter started senior year.
Well, it's not really senior year, but it is his fourth year.
No. For your your daughter started senior year.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. She did. Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable. They were, 10 years ago, they were kids. I feel like an old man. You know, I rarely feel like an old man because I'm so youthful with my beautiful skin, my swarthy skin. And my glowing beard, but your kids make me feel so old. Because
how do you think they make me feel?
You've seen them grow up. You know, I came in like 10 years ago. They were like children 10 years ago.
Yeah,
like they were like real kids, and then now they're adults. Your daughter's an adult. Your son is an adult. It's wild. It's crazy when you see that. I know I veered off here, but I was. Just telling Jess about that the other night because I believe you posted or Steph posted a picture of your daughter, starting senior year. I'm like, oh my God, she was a kid.
I know. She's a young woman now.
It's crazy. I hate all of it. I see kids growing up and then I see like me getting older.
You don't realize it as it's happening. So with your kids, as your kids get older, you know, they walk, they do whatever they do. They get, you know, they go to school and when it's happening, you don't really understand it. It's only when you time has gone by and you look back and you see like a photo of one of your kids when they were really young, and you're like, oh geez, like I forgot they even looked like that, you know. Yeah. This has happened to us over the past year because we have that smart display in the kitchen. And it's just set to show pictures of the family. And of course, Google's smart enough to know that baby Mark is adult Mark and baby Kelly is adult Kelly. And it shows pictures of the kids from all their ages. And these pictures will come up, and a lot of times you'll kind of remember them, and sometimes you even won't. But it's like, oh man, I mean, you forget, you know,
all of it.
Time goes by quick, and it's,
yeah. So, all of us. I know we went down memory lane, and you know what? We're going to have yep. time to do our Patreon show today, guys. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to be able to do our Patreon. And I know we got a nice group of people watching this live here. If you are watching on YouTube, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button right now. You're on the page anyway. Just scroll down just a tiny bit. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. Paul and I are back to our normal schedule, which is a rarity in many cases. Next week, however, I'm flying back from LA on Tuesday. So if we could do Thursday, that would be absolutely perfect to do the show. But, you know, the traveling has settled down. Paul and I are back, so we're going to be doing more of the Patreon shows. If you like the show and you like supporting us, like today, we have no ads. So the only way we'll make money from the show is if you go to patreon.com/whatthetech and you join the group there and become a patron of ours. We do bonus shows whenever we can. We throw, you know, extra material for you guys. Right after the show, we're going to be doing a What the Talk. And also here on YouTube, you could hit that dollar button on the bottom and fund us if you want. Send us $1, $2, whatever you like to send us. 50 cents, whatever you feel comfortable doing. But the biggest thing you could do right now for us is hit the subscribe button here on YouTube. And also, wherever you listen to podcasts, this is the biggest help for us. Whatever podcast app you're doing, take 2 seconds out, load it up, hit the subscribe button, search for us, What the Tech. We have an audio feed. We have a video feed. Subscribe to the audio. You don't need to do the video if you're watching this. Go to YouTube and watch us. So hit the subscribe button. Like us. Do all that stuff. It's a big help. Also for Paul, go to therot.com. I'm not ending the show. I just want to give a little plug here. People are going to freak out. They're like, wait a minute. Are you ending it early? No. Go to therot.com. Join Therot Premium. Are you going to be... is there new stuff coming for premium members? I heard a little rumble. Okay. I'm not going to go into it. I heard a little gossip. The stuff is coming.
There's some stuff.
Yeah, which is always fun. You know, I'm looking forward to you and Brad and Mary Jo being here in October because I can't remember the last time that all of us got together. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, it really has. So I'm looking forward to that. That was it. That was all the plugs. That's all I'm throwing your way. You know, hit the subscribe button here on YouTube. I could see it when you do it. I get emails. Let's see how many people did it. And did people hit subscribe? No, I got a JetBlue confirmation for runway issues at Terminal 5 tomorrow.
Awesome.
That's what I got. Thank you for that, JetBlue. All right. I want to ask you about this walkie-talkie nonsense.
Okay. I don't know much about it.
Okay. So I got a little confused from this article. So you have it on Therot.com. Who did the article? Mm-hmm.
Mahdi, I'm sure.
Okay. By the way, how's he doing?
I seems to be doing okay.
Okay. I saw that he changed his last name to Sams on Twitter.
That's funny. I hadn't noticed that.
I just saw that and I started chuckling. So I'm on therot.com and I saw this article about how Apple reportedly has halted their walkie-talkie project. And right. I find this fascinating because what it would do... It was called Project Off-Grid Radio Service. So it would work off of the 900 megahertz frequency, wireless technology that's being used by the utilities currently. And the features would rely on Intel's modem. And Apple would work closely with Intel to build a new feature that would essentially, you would be able to use this frequency, which is interesting. Well, and it was for a walkie-talkie peer-to-peer feature, but also that would allow you to text each other without using a cellular connection. I imagine this project was more for emerging markets than anything else.
In the sense, right. So, yeah, that makes sense. To me, what it sounds a little bit like is iMessage, you know, and it's like this this thing that normally requires particular technology works elsewhere, kind of thing. It sounds like a typical Apple thing. You know, we're gonna go above and beyond what's typical for this type of functionality, and it's only gonna work if everyone has an iPhone.
It's not. So is it a walkie-talkie feature like a Nextel, or is it just peer-to-peer texting?
It's peer-to-peer. Well, it's gone. It doesn't matter. But I thought it was peer-to-peer.
I mean, we don't know now, right? We don't know if it's gone because they just acquired Intel's
business. Probably iMessage for voice is maybe the right way to look at it.
Yeah. I found it interesting that they were working on this. When I saw that they were a while ago, I'm like, huh, okay. Industry devices, right?
Okay. Sorry.
Go ahead.
You're probably right about emerging markets. I mean, there's no there are certainly issues with wireless carriers these days, but one of those issues is not voice minutes, you know, or texting limits. Like, we don't really have those. So,
yeah.
And I'm sure part of the issue is that Intel doesn't have a modem business anymore, and that, you know, most of those people probably went along to Apple, but some of them probably didn't, and maybe they didn't have some key personnel they needed who were working on it or whatever. So,
yeah, I thought it was interesting that they first got into this. Concept of just doing iMessage and having, you know, that built in where iMessage always works.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? What happened to the story about iMessage being tested on Android and Windows? That went away.
Yeah.
They tried it. They were testing it. It was happening.
It seems like something that would be super popular, but maybe that's the problem.
Do they want it to be super popular? Yeah.
Well, you want it to be something that makes you want to have more of this, and that's why you might go buy an Apple device next time, right? And so it's possible that iMessage was a bridge too far, that it would have, a lot of people would have said, great, this is the only reason I was going to switch to an iPhone. Now I don't have to worry about it. You know.
Well, when they started going into, I'm opening up iMessage right now because I want to see if it. So when they opened up within iMessage to have like application access, right? Like I could access my Delta stuff, my Delta app through iMessage and send emojis and things like that, or Google Maps or Google Photos. Yeah. Middleware, is that what you called it?
Yeah, well, that's what they called it in the 90s.
I would have put everything on the line and said, oh, this is how they're going to introduce it to Windows and Android, because the biggest concept is, okay, now you put iMessage on Android. How are you going to monetize this? Where's the benefit of giving
a
really good messaging service and make it into a platform?
Well, you know what? So Apple's services business is based around the notion that they have some installed base. And the big growth for them in the future is going to be people paying for these services, unless they intend to bring those services to other platforms, which, by the way, they might over time, but in the beginning, no. Then giving people less of a reason to buy an iPhone is maybe not the best strategy. So it's possible that it's possible they could announce it tomorrow, but maybe one of the reasons we haven't seen iMessage on Android especially is that things have changed with regards to iPhone sales. Mm. Maybe it happened in an unexpected way for them. They seem to act like they were confused by this, but they maybe had to push this other, you know, the services part of the business harder to better monetize your existing customers. And when they look at iMessage, like, we really don't see the benefit of, because what you're saying is makes sense, but it's possible that whatever money you could make from an iMessage user on Android would be so small, it just wouldn't justify that not being an iPhone user.
Yeah, well, initially, I thought they were going to have premium, you know, emojis and premium gifts and access to, you know, a monthly fee for $2.99 or whatever.
A hamburger emoji that doesn't suck.
That doesn't. Yeah, yeah. All the emojis you've ever wanted. I thought that would be it, you know, and they open it up and that's how they start making some money off of Android and Windows. But interesting. I find it interesting that didn't happen. Also, I want to talk about Disney for a second with you, Paul.
As you would.
I did not think I would be as interested in the Disney streaming service as I am right now. This is a major blow to Netflix. And the reason why is the fact that it has I'll tell you why, and you tell me what you think.
Yeah. Okay.
The Disney property is tremendous at this point, right? They own everything. They have the library of content of videos and television shows, and fine, maybe it's not your thing, but they're going to be bundling it with Hulu. The price is very competitive, and they have emphasized 4K content, UHD content, as being part of this in their marketing, in the selling. I don't know. You know, you brought up the fact that, you know, replacing cable with all these streaming services and the argument that, you know, now I'm paying so much. But if you're talking about bundling something, this is not a bad between.
Yeah, I don't. So I guess we'll see what happens. I don't see this harming Netflix. I think these things will be complementary, and in part because they priced it so attractively that it's more likely people who are paying for Hulu will just give up on that. In fact, I think long term, Hulu should go away and Disney Plus should be the service.
It should be the service, yeah.
Right. So I, for me, I mean, we pay for multiple services, like I think a lot of people listening to this probably do. There are some we can't really kind of manage. Like we don't really use Amazon Prime Video a lot, but we have an Amazon Prime account, so obviously we just get that. But Netflix, we pay probably for the most expensive tier because we have 4K UHD and we have, I think it's four streams at once. My son's away in college and can watch it. My daughter is down in her basement, Bond villain lair, and she can do what she does and we can watch something upstairs and we don't have to worry about conflicting. But we currently pay for both Hulu and HBO Now, I think it's called. And one of those is going to be going away pretty soon because the football season's starting up. We got to think about TV services again. It's getting, you know, we don't have time to watch all of these things. But, you know, it's $6, I think it is, $6.99, whatever the price for Disney Plus is. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. There's a lot of content there that I think a lot of people are going to like. So I think there's place for it. I think there's a place for it. And depending on where anyone is with whatever tiers they're getting of whatever services they get, I think Disney can slot in very nicely. So yeah, I would have said last thing we need is another service like the CBS. What's the CBS service?
CBS All Access.
All Access.
Yeah.
God, it seems like every channel everyone's doing something like this. It's like, guys, we don't need more services, but Disney is such a content powerhouse. Between Star Wars and Marvel and, you know, Disney, yeah, and Pixar, you know, and ABC and ESPN. Yeah. Okay. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the early days of the music services business where like Sony had their own service and, you know, a couple of the music companies would get together with a couple of others and you'd have like these music services that only had some stuff. Yeah, Disney's going to be like that. But Disney has such a good selection of content. I think they have a much better chance of seriously challenging Netflix than does Hulu by itself, certainly, or Amazon, right? Because both of those services have one or two decent original content shows that could be spoken in the same sentence as the top Netflix stuff. HBO certainly does too, by the way. But Disney can get in there immediately. And I think Disney becomes much more vital than Hulu, which it owns, or Amazon.
Well, they're going to be here's where it's super attractive: Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus for $12.99 a month.
Yeah,
that's great.
Right now, that the version of Hulu you get is not as good as the one I'm paying for right now.
No, that's because I have commercial-free. Yeah,
and if I understand what ESPN Plus is, that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's like the other sports on it, you know, like to me, what I want is like an online services version of ESPN, which would be multiple channels of content. But if I understand what I could be wrong, but if I understand ESPN Plus, it's like all the stuff that isn't on ESPN, you know what I mean? Like
But now they're sacrificing a lot of content from ESPN to ESPN Plus to drive the subscribers. So the big deal for ESPN Plus was the deal with the UFC.
I want all ESPN. I want you know all I mean? The like, I don't want a lesser ESPN. I want ESPN. So maybe someday they will offer a $20 tier that's no commercials, that has all of the stuff from all of their services. And, you know, maybe at that time we have some decisions to make. But I think it's going to be complimentary. I think a lot of people are going to have both.
Yeah, well, Netflix HBO. HBO now has one too coming out, right?
Yeah, HBO is kind of an outlier because HBO is amazing content, and we've been paying for HBO, I would say, over the kind of the middle half of the year. But once you get through it all, if you catch up on Game of Thrones, you catch up on, we rewatched Deadwood. We rewatched, I'm forgetting, Veep. You could rewatch, there's all kinds of awesome shows, The Sopranos, you know, whatever, Rome. There's dozens and dozens of shows. But I mean, like, just like continually subscribing to HBO, I guess some combination of like the movies they offer, which obviously rotate month to month, their original content, which come, like Westworld is coming back for season three, whatever. I don't personally, I don't see a 12-month subscription to that, but I could picture after the football season ends, going back for a month or two to watch Westworld or something, or, you know, and catch up that way. But
and that's a great part of what you're saying. You know, even with TV service, like I'm a big fan of YouTube TV, just because it has the highest quality out of all the streaming services. And I've used all of them, and they've gotten better. Hulu's gotten better. DirecTV Now is now AT&T. They're all better.
We talk about YouTube a lot. I wish YouTube was better about stuff. You know, do you ever find yourself doing this? You're clicking through like the recommended stuff on YouTube.
On the TV or on my laptop?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, regularly. Are you talking about TV?
I was talking about TV, but yeah.
Yeah, we're almost certainly going to go YouTube TV when we go back to TV. But YouTube, because we do talk about it a lot, just real quick, because this is something, this is like the old days when you would, you'd buy a book on Amazon for your mother or some other person. And then for the next 6 months, you would get recommendations based on this thing, which has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm getting like books about menopause, you know, or whatever. Like on YouTube, like I actually have found myself now on multiple occasions. You click through the recommended stuff, and every once in a while there'll be like a random thing. You're not even sure why they recommended it. And you're like, I think I would like to watch this video about Bon Jovi or about I'm trying to think of some stupid topic like fishing or, you know, something like I normally just don't care about. But then you don't click on it, because if you do, you're never gonna not be recommended this stuff for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's kind of a problem. Yeah, like I wish there was a way to kind of click and hold on it and be like, do not you dare recommend stuff based on this.
It's sometimes so smart and sometimes so dumb.
It always seems kind of ham-handed to me. Like I watch a lot of like, tech retrospective kind of things. And I'm always, it's like 90% of my feed now is like, this is how a Commodore 64 makes sounds. You know, I was like, I don't care.
The Windows 10 hours of Windows 10 startup sounds, you know, like I get a recommendation like that. Well, here's something that happened.
Windows startup graphic in a row, you know, like great.
So Good Eats is a show that I've always liked. Mm-hmm. Elton Brown's show, it was on Food Network for years. They went away about, 2011, something like that. And now it's back, right? Now it's back. And they put the first episode on YouTube. It did tremendous. I watched it. Mm-hmm. It's on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, how strange.
It's on the Food Network channel.
You
sent me
a photo of the guy, and I said, he looks like the guy from Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Not quite. It's back.
Elton Brown looks a little rough.
But now, all I'm getting is everything from the Food Network. Just endless. Endless amounts of videos from the Food Network. The way that I figured it out is that it'll dump it all at the same time, and it'll pull away slowly.
Yeah,
it'll start pulling away. But the weird thing,
God help you though, it takes a long time for that stuff to get out of there.
Tell me about it, because my kids use my YouTube account, right? And I put on like their show if I'm putting on something, and now all I'm getting is Ryan toy review videos.
Sure.
Right now,
my Twitter feed today was full of, I can't see it anymore, but it was full of like this baloney about like, it's like food stuff and like, sushi's too expensive, so you should use cooked fish. And then this other guy's like, well, you should look into ceviche. And someone else was like, you guys should make calamari. I'm like, why is this in my Twitter feed? And I go back, I'm trying to figure out where this all comes from. And it's because YouTube TV, which apparently I follow, promoted some guy who has a show that I've never heard of. And then all of the replies are for some reason in my feed. I'm like, what happened here? I don't want to see this stuff. I don't know. I don't know.
It's getting smarter, but I don't know how quickly with that stuff it's getting better. Also, this is interesting. I was not a big Chromecast user. I had no need to use a Chromecast. Everything that I was watching was essentially on the TV on as an app. But since I've got this new Vizio, I'm using Chromecast all the time and Apple Play all the time. If I'm using, you know, like the USA app and I got to stream something to the TV, I'm just using that. It was said that I think it's no longer going to be receiving updates, the first generation Chromecast. And that was the big one that everybody ended up getting. So I'm curious if it's going to drive people to purchase a new Chromecast. Almost everyone that I know that has a Chromecast has that first generation Chromecast because it was so inexpensive.
Yeah.
What was the price when it launched? Do you remember that?
$35.
Was the first one?
I think so.
I don't know why everybody got so many of them.
The cheapest price on an Apple TV at the time was like $250, and the cheapest price on a Roku was probably like $150, and it was like, this thing is crazy cheap.
I mean, it's still pretty inexpensive. How much is a Chromecast Ultra now? Oh, my God, $60?
Yeah, that's 4K and has an Ethernet thing.
That's crazy. That's wild. I had no idea. I mean, I have one, but you had no idea it was that much money. But the first gen is going. I'm curious if it's going to drive people to purchase more Chromecasts, yeah, or people are going to, you know, just forget about it.
They really improved the design over time. They've got a nice little, because, you know, oftentimes it's kind of a tight spot back there for the port. Yeah. So the new ones obviously have that little strip that comes off with the port on it. And, you know, they're nice. I have them all over the place. I have audio and video.
I have to tell you my disappointment with the Fire TV. I think they made a big mistake by dropping the little pucks, the bricks for the Fire TVs. Yeah. They've kind of gone backwards as far as design, because now it's about the Fire Stick and no longer the Fire TV. And I find that the second gen Fire TV was the quickest one still today. From benchmarking and everything, it's still the fastest Fire TV out there. But it doesn't have 4K. And it doesn't have support like the other ones do, which is interesting that they kind of went backwards and slower. Because that was intended to be the gaming one. Let's see. New Fire TV 2019. Is there anything coming out? We'll find out. All right. So, Paul, we're going to do a post show after this. So if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to do What the Talk right after this. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Next week, we'll do a show on Thursday because I'm flying back on Tuesday, and I'll lose my mind if I have to rush to get here. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. You can follow Paul at The Rot. And remember, subscribe to the show, follow us everywhere, blah, blah, blah. We'll see you all next time. Take care.